Middle of October, all's well at Wisconsin Public Radio, where you'll get all the news you need. The arts and culture of Western Wisconsin on Spectrum West. Well, I hope you didn't listen to that billboard at the top of the hour. Something went wacky there, because here is the truth. This week on Spectrum West, actor Jeff Daniels had a string of blockbuster roles since we last talked. He's also recorded a couple gangbuster CDs since then as well. He's coming back to Chippewa Falls, a place he loves to play. He'll bring us up to speed on his life and times. Jim Oliver's here with the first of a couple chats with authors who are guests at this year's Chippewa Valley Book Festival. Today, it's Judith Claire Mitchell, an educator in Madison and author of A Reunion of Ghosts, among others. Sunday begins the silver anniversary season of the Master Singers. Director Gary Schwartzoff visits with all the good news. And it's always good to begin with a smile, don't you think? Because sometimes you just need to brighten your day. And sometimes, when it fits the schedule, that can mean calling Mary Mack because you saw that she's on the road. Literally, driving on that road. And one of the stops is downtown Eau Claire for a stand-up comedy show hosted by Clearwater Comedy. As I said, sometimes you just need to brighten your day.
Cool.
And when I saw that you were coming back to Eau Claire, I said, you know, it's been a while, and I need a dose of mac and cheese. By the way, you should call your Wisconsin tours mac and cheese, if you haven't done that already. But your schedule is very geographically and venue eclectic. Tonight, Thursday, you are in, is it Malacca?
Malacca,
yeah. Minnesota. You're in the City Hall Council Room, and then Friday the 13th, you're in Merrill, Wisconsin, and you're at Les and Jim's Lincoln Lane's bowling alley. Here's what happens after that. After Saturday night, you're in Eau Claire, so that's quite a step up. You head to Canada, and then you're going to Vermont, and then to Maine, and then to Boston, and then to New York City.
Yeah.
You go from a city council room in a bowling alley to New York City. Is that a normal life for a comedian?
No, and I just realized it as you're saying it. It's not normal as far as where comedians usually work. I mean, my first paid gig was in a tattoo parlor, so I knew that things were going to go askew from that point on. But the City Hall one, I think, very sensible, because people can also pay their parking tickets,
yeah,
take care of any bail problems, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of those library City Hall combos they got going. Hey, I got to get my dog in the back seat.
How is your dog?
This happened on an interview. He's never come up to the front seat during an interview or while I'm driving at all.
Well, that's because he knows I'm a dog person.
He's great. Last year he was in the dog park of 17 different states. Yeah, he does all the touring with me, and he's a good companion. He's a literal road dog.
So then when you entertain in a bowling alley, are people bowling while you're doing that?
No. I have a very, very strict rider, Al. My contract is very strict. You have to shut the lanes off.
Ah.
People can sit in the crowd with their bowling balls. They just can't use them.
Hmm.
People are polite in Merrill. They ought to be able to handle that.
I don't know anything about how long you've been on stage making people chuckle.
Yeah, about 14 years ago. I've had a lot to talk about, I guess, because I haven't quit yet. I was teaching school in Nashville and jumped in, did an open mic, and liked it.
You were a clarinet teacher, weren't you?
Yeah, I taught band, and then I taught clarinet lessons. My famous clarinet joke, in my head it's famous, but is I have 2 degrees in clarinet. That's why I do comedy. Clarinet never comes in handy unless you're driving and you hit a deer and you don't have a crowbar in your trunk to put it out of its misery.
Yeah, you know?
And then the end, I say, last time I hit a deer, I did have my clarinet with me, and I only got through like 2 songs and he was out. Some of the jokes are too long, Al.
You can do your thing while you're driving.
Yeah.
I love that. Staying on this history of Mary Mac theme, has the comedy changed with the lady as she matures? Has your comedy gone through changes like you have?
Yes. Well, everything in life that happens, I talk about it, and because I have an interesting and varied family, I talk about them. I talk about my husband, who is also a comedian. But, yeah, I mean, it does change, and I have very little that is fiction. It's mostly nonfiction. And recently, like this week in Ohio, I talked a lot about my PBS television addiction.
Mm.
These are troubling times out.
And I think that's probably healthy to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, I thought I'd find some more people in the audience that could relate to me. Surprising, fine. Sometimes out of a few hundred people, it's just me and another lady.
Mm. On the phone with Mary Mac, comedian, star of stage, CD, blog, Facebook. Okay. Can we throw a screen in there somewhere?
I've been on TV as just myself, though. So.
Then I can throw that in. So I'll say star of stage, screen, CD, blog, Facebook, etc. She's appearing Saturday night at the Plus. That's in downtown Eau Claire, 7 p.m. Here's the way I've defined you. You are edgy, but in an unsoiled kind of way.
Well, yeah, I guess that's right, because I'm a clean comic, but sometimes things happen to me that are real things, and sometimes life isn't clean.
Yeah.
And so I report those things back to you. Because honesty, a lot of humor and honesty.
Yeah.
And so I report back. And I kind of got a new way to describe myself as of this week, because there's been way too much driving. And that, I would say, is in my act. I'm the most practical person in the world, and I assume and try to tell the crowds that they're ridiculous, when actually it's the other way around. I'm totally ridiculous. But so is Jules Verne, and now people can go under the ocean for extended amounts of time.
There's results there. I hear that you have a new CD coming out. Tell us about that.
Yes, I have a new CD. It should be out this winter, unless I try to sell it to a label or something. It's called Mrs. Taco Man. That's me. Sometimes I help my sister out at the bar in northern Wisconsin on a Tuesday when we're allowed to eat tacos and northern Wisconsin. I have a short hairdo. People will look in the kitchen and they ask my sister, who's the new taco boy you got back there? And that's me, Al, but I'm almost too old to have children, you know? I'm Taco Man. Have some respect.
Well, you're appearing Saturday night at the Plus in downtown Eau Claire. That's becoming very well known for comedy. And, of course, the group Clearwater Comedy are the people who are bringing you to town. You must have a warm spot in your heart for them.
I do. I just think to bring comedy to downtown Eau Claire like that, it's a big reason that some people go downtown. I hope Eau Claire continues with the revitalization of downtown, and I just think it's great. They bring comedians in who travel the world, and people don't even have to leave Eau Claire, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're all very funny guys themselves, and there's some ladies that I know. I don't know if they're still in Eau Claire. I think they got so funny they moved to big cities to become wildly rich from comedy checks. I hope they do.
Well, Mary, thanks for being with us here on Spectrum West. I want to make sure that you drive more carefully than you have been in the last few minutes, because I know talking on the phone and stuff is not what we're supposed to be doing, and I feel bad asking you to do it. So have fun in Milaca, Minnesota. Have fun in Merrill, and then we'll all have fun together in Eau Claire. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much, Al.
Mary Mac live in person, Eau Claire, downtown, The Plus, Saturday, 7 p.m. Jeff Daniels returns to Chippewa Falls, the book festival readies itself, and more. A bit later on Spectrum West. Sensational seasons are underway. Jim Oliver is all over that. Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin.
Thank you, sir. The University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Theater will stage You're in Town today, Thursday, through Sunday, and October 18th through the 20th, and on the 22nd in the Riverside Theater at the University. The Foreigner will be staged by the Menominee Theater Guild Friday through Sunday and October 20th through the 22nd at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts. The St. Croix Art Barn of Osceola will stage Love Letters Friday and Saturday. Rocky Horror Show will be staged by the Eau Claire Children's Theater October 19th to the 21st and the 26th to the 28th at the Oxford Theater. The Beverly Hillbillies will be staged by the Neillsville Area Players Friday, Saturday, and Sunday and October 21st and 22nd at the Neillsville High School. Theater in the Woods of Shell Lake will stage Death by Design today, Thursday, through Sunday and the 19th to the 22nd at the Eric Aquam Theater. James and the Giant Peach will be staged by the Falls Players October 20th at the Lunda Theater in Black River Falls. The Old Gem Theater in New Richmond will stage Johnny Appleseed weekdays for groups continuing to October 28th. Come Blow Your Horn will continue weekends through October 28th at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, with the Center Stage Series presenting the St. Thomas Boys Choir of Leipzig performing in concert Saturday, November 18th. Tickets.luther.edu. Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony. Schubert's Unfinished Symphony and Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 6 kick off the season October 21st at Eau Claire State Theater. Details at cvsymphony.org. Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space for events. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery and fair trade gifts. More at simply-dunn.com. Well, this Sunday begins the silver anniversary season for the Marvelous Master Singers, an autumn concert that is traditionally a musical tribute to the country we call home. To provide all the details on the season and the first performance of that season, Gary Schwartzoff, musical director for the 25-year duration, accepted our invitation. Hey, congratulations on 25 years.
Thank you, Al.
Because of that, we should take a look back.
Sure.
Tell us about the Master Singers in the early years. Was it a different kind of ensemble, or has it been steady?
Well, I think in terms of programming offered to the public, we are pretty standard to our initial years. When we began, we were really just doing two different concerts a year, one based around Christmas and the other one around Easter. Uh-huh. And then, probably 8 to 10 years into it, we began then offering a concert of American choral composers in the fall. Those are the three mainstays of our programming, have been for quite some time. Then added to that were some opportunities to perform in Minneapolis, secondary performances or ancillary performances of given concerts here in town. We've kept that up and moved to other venues in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area with the holiday concert. And then in the spring, in March, we perform at St. Mary's Basilica. It's our little European tour wrapped into an afternoon.
So when it was decided by you or your little group that you wanted to form something, how did you get the word out? Was it a smaller group at first?
Yes, the choir is twice as large now as it used to be. We were in the around 2024, and now we're 44 this year, so it's grown a lot over the years. Actually, the Master Singers under charter, the name of the group is the Eau Claire Musical Arts Chorale. So our predecessor is the Eau Claire Musical Arts Chorale, was in existence prior to me coming. I arrived here in 1991. 92 is my first year, and at that time the group was sort of winding down, if you would. They decided not to go on. It was a year of it being at rest, and then in the year 93, 94, we decided to begin the Master Singers after I had visited with some members of the former group and others who were interested in singing. For sake of 501(c)(3) status, the name, the Eau Claire Musical Arts Chorale, that all had been done. So we kept the umbrella name and renamed the ensemble the Master Singers.
So you have some members who've been along the whole ride?
There are some 250 members in this ensemble during its history.
Oh, wow.
there are four founding members who are singing in the ensemble this year. Three of them have been with the ensemble in its entirety. Marsha Van Beek, Howard White, and Nancy Schwartzoff.
Does it appear as if there's a roadmap for keeping the Master Singers going well into the future?
Well, I hope so. For a community of this size, the Greater Chippewa Valley, there's certainly a need for an ensemble such as this. For those who had the opportunity to sing in fine a cappella ensembles during their years in college and beyond high school, I've always felt that that was the niche, if you would, for this particular ensemble. Yes, there are plans for the immediate future. We've named the composer in residence for next year, Elaine Hagenberg. Composer, choral director, lives in Des Moines. She has become very well known in recent years. I look at her being quite similar to Dan Forrest, whom we've done works of for several times. So that is in the works right now. We're collaborating with Max Garland. He's actually written the poem for this work, which will center on the confluence of the two rivers and the importance of arts in the Chippewa Valley and the beauty of nature. So that poem has been etched and sent on to the composer. Now the two of them will collaborate with myself, and that'll become the centerpiece of next fall's concert, fall 2018. We've also offered it, should they wish, to the opening of the confluence on October. That's the topic of the piece and the sort of the purpose, if you would, for location of this particular concert hall. In addition, the Masked Singers have been invited to the 75th anniversary of D-Day and the Liberation of France concert, which will be held in Paris in July 2019. I'm conducting that festival. We're expecting it to be in the area of 400 plus singers with choirs coming together on the American Cemetery on the coast of Normandy, and then moving into Paris for rehearsals, mass rehearsals together with choir and orchestra, and then the concert recognizing that solemn anniversary will be right around the 8th, 9th of July.
That's huge.
That is huge. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm hoping the Masked Singers will choose to be part of this. Obviously, it will cost some money to travel to Paris to do this. We hope that there will be many there. Actually, I would love this festival to be an allied country choral festival. Really the emphasis. It's an American choral festival in Paris, but we'll do our best to attract choirs from around the world.
Dr. Gary Schwartzoff with us. He is Professor Emeritus now, UW-Eau Claire, and Director of the Master Singers. They have their silver anniversary season into 2018. They perform Sunday, this coming Sunday, the 15th, 2 p.m., Lake Street United Methodist Church, Eau Claire. And it's your usual autumn tribute to America, America My Home 2017 Remembered. Define that title for me.
It was not the initial title for the fall. I came back to this in that it was a celebratory season, the silver anniversary, and we wanted to do some things that marked the history of this ensemble. So on this program, there are 14 scores by the Masked Singers. Over half of them are new to the ensemble, but there are those works from our past seasons which have been commissioned by composers from across the United States that we wish to bring back to the program.
So the remembered part is the looking back.
That's cool. There are, as I said, numerous pieces which are new, including our commissioned work from Connor Copine from Des Moines, Waves That Seek the Shore. It's a poem by Sarah Teasdale, a lovely a cappella work that we're happy to present in this concert. Also, two other which we feel are touching on social issues important to us here in the Chippewa Valley and across the country. One, Alzheimer's disease, and the other, suicide prevention. Piece entitled When Memory Fades by Eric Nelson, a poignant text on what happens during Alzheimer's when one is affected. Also a piece entitled Please Stay by Jake Runestad. He is a composer from Minneapolis, and that focuses on suicide prevention. So we're trying to raise the consciousness of our audience to that, and we're asking for a free will donation. Funds will go equally to two local charities that support these two endeavors. The ADRC here in Eau Claire works with a Stand on the Light Choir. It's a choir that's open to dementia patients. For suicide prevention, the funds will go to the Wellness Shack.
You have special guests, too, on Sunday. You have a couple. You have some young people.
Yes. We're pleased to welcome the Regis High School Choir, Rebecca Santine, director. She is a member of the Masked Singers, and she'll present her choir doing three selections
come December, it's lessons and carols. There's a lot of people that don't feel as if it's Christmas until they hear the master singers sing. And then early spring, it's the Easter concert. Well, if you want, and I know you do, all the information about not only Sunday's concert, but the Silver Anniversary season, which includes the three majors and the other ancillary concerts, I invite you to go to the website, themastersingers.net. Dr. Gary Schwartzoff, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Al.
The Master Singers, Sunday, 2 p.m., Lake Street United Methodist Church, Eau Claire. Tickets at Festival Foods, First Congregational United Church of Christ in Eau Claire. Online at themastersingers.net and at the door. Coming up, the music of and a chat with Jeff Daniels on tour with his son's band coming to the Heidi Center. But first, it's time again for one of the premier book festivals in the Midwest, and I can't think of a better person to welcome featured authors than a premier reporter, Jim Oliver.
The Chippewa Valley Book Festival, sponsored by the Literary Arts Committee of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, opens Monday and continues through October 26th. Among the many published authors appearing during the festival is Judith Claire Mitchell, professor of English and director of the program in creative writing at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Professor Mitchell is a graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop, the author of novels The Last Day of the War, and more recently A Reunion of Ghosts, which received the Edna Ferber Book Prize and a Friends of American Writers Award. She will be making a presentation on A Reunion of Ghosts at 9 a.m. Saturday, October 21st, at the L.E. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire. Professor Mitchell joins us by telephone from Madison to talk about A Reunion of Ghosts and how authors can blend their imagination with historical fact to create a good story. Well, Professor, give us an idea of how all that works.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. And how does it all work? You know, it's a blend of industry and mystery, I think, when one writes a historical novel. I began A Reunion of Ghosts having heard about a chemist who lived around the turn of the century and invented, I don't know if invented is the right word, synthesized the first chemical weapons to be used in warfare. His name in real life is Fritz Haber. I changed his name in the book. But he also had a wife. All I knew about her was that she, too, was a chemist, which was very unusual for her time, being a woman. She had a PhD in chemistry, which was very unusual. She also objected to his work with the chemical warfare and the weapons he was developing. And she ultimately killed herself after he first assisted the Germans in deploying this weaponry against the French. And I was fascinated by what it must have been like to be an educated woman not allowed to have a voice in what her husband was promulgating in the world to the extent that she took her own life. So that was what I wanted to understand. And I'm not sure if that answered your question, but that's where I began with the book. And because there was so little about her, her name was Clara, we say, there was so little about Clara out there, I really did have to bring in my imagination and my understanding of human nature, imagination of what it would be like to have been that woman, observing these terrible things but silenced to the point where you take your own life while your own child is sleeping in your house. So that combination of what I knew to be true factually and what I knew to be true as a human being came into play.
The book is funny.
Yeah.
But it's deadly serious with the three sisters who we start out the book with who are contemplating ending their lives.
Yes, my agent sold this book by telling editors it was a funny book about suicide, which which worked. But I would not describe it that way. I would say it's a very serious book about a family in which suicide is prevalent generation after generation, that is narrated by women with a sense of humor. And that's where the funny comes in, because as depressed as they are, they just cannot resist making a pun or a bad joke if it occurs to them. The sisters are trying to come to grips with this family they descend from. The actual family, the Haber family, was plagued by suicide generation after generation after generation, which also fascinated me. I originally thought the chemist's wife took her life solely as a political protest or as a moral protest, but I gradually came to realize that there were genetic and psychological factors involved that went even beyond that. So I wanted to look at that also. As someone who loves life so very much, it is a hard thing for me to understand this genetic proclivity to end one's life. So the more I found out about this family, the more fascinated I was with them and the more complex they became. So that's where the sisters came in. Most of the characters in the book are based on real people. The sisters are completely invented.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Judith Claire Mitchell, who is professor of English and director of the program in creative writing at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. She's the author of A Reunion of Ghosts. Well, why don't you introduce us to those three fictional ladies?
Well, their names are Lady, V, and Delph, which are all nicknames. They were named actually after flowers, which is a theme throughout the book, something else I just invented. They have the grimmest lives. I think of this book in some ways as a biography of the 20th century, a fictional biography of the 20th century, and I just dumped everything that went wrong in that century on this poor family and on these poor sisters. You name it, if it happened, they go through it. One of the sisters has cancer. One of the sisters falls in love with a gay man who is dying of AIDS. They're lonely. Things are not working out. They have the worst jobs, all of which I held at one point in my life. And not my professorship, however, which is glorious, but my jobs before that. Mm-hmm. And the one thing they have, though, is each other, and they adore each other. They love each other. A psychiatrist might say they're a little bit codependent. So, again, it's an examination of the joys of family and the limitations of family, which I think echoes just the joy of living and the limitations and pain of this, you know, beautiful but complex life that we are each given.
So you've written, I guess, two books, is that correct?
Yeah, okay, I've published two books.
Two published. Anyway, both are rather grim topics. One is about World War One, and then, of course, The Reunion of Ghosts, which has its low point. So are you ever going to write something really light?
Never, no.
Okay.
I'm not your girl for that.
Oh, okay.
People always say to me, I was both surprised and felt a little guilty about how much I laughed while reading your books. So I guess they're light in that way, because I do like to celebrate the good and the dark, but I'm really interested in the human condition, and that involves a lot of pain. And, you know, it doesn't turn out well, in the end, you know, the best ending is still we die.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
I'm like the Woody Allen of the Midwest. It's just a big problem for me to think about and deal with. And of course, you know, the corollary to that is, how do we live our best, fullest lives with this looming?
You know, I'm always fascinated about book authors and how they write and how they find the time to write. Now, you seem to have a pretty demanding day job, so how do you manage your time in order to...
Very badly. I always tell my students never to model themselves after me. I have to admit, I put all my energy into the students and into the teaching, and I do a lot of administrative work. So I write summers when I am not teaching. Sometimes I'm blessed with a leave of absence where I just write feverishly. I'm often up until 3 or 4 in the morning trying to get some writing done. But that's a struggle for me. I think It's interesting to talk to writers about how they manage to both work and create. It's difficult, and I will not lie. I don't have a great method. I recommend methods to people. I know all the methods, but do I follow them? Perhaps not so much.
Do you have something in the oven that's percolating right now?
I do. You know, my first book is about, as you suggested, not a happy topic. It's about the aftermath of the Armenian genocide, which took place during World War One. So that was about genocide. This book was about suicide. And when I finished, I just, in the most bloody-minded way, said, well, I guess I'm up to homicide. So I'm writing a book about a, based on a true story, again, as was the case in all the books, about a female serial killer who lived in the 1950s. She did her work in the 1950s. And again, it's about the choices we make and the world we live in. And I describe it as a book about murder and feminism.
We'll look forward to see what comes out of that.
But it'll be funny, I promise.
Okay. And we don't have to be embarrassed about laughing during it, is that the idea?
No, we can never be embarrassed or feel guilty about laughing. That's what saves us.
Well, we've been talking to Judith Claire Mitchell, professor of English and director of the program in creative writing at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. She is the author of the novels The Last Day of the War and, more recently, A Reunion of Ghosts. She'll be making a presentation during the Chippewa Valley Book Festival at 9 a.m. Saturday, October 21st, at the L.E. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire. Professor Mitchell, you've been a delight to talk to. I envy your students, and thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And remember, all the details you need are at cvbookfest.com. Thank you, Jim Oliver. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, presenting multiple exhibitions annually, while home to art inspired by water, including Washington Crossing the Delaware by artist Emmanuel Leutze, mmam.org. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, celebrating Septoberfest, October 19th through the 21st, with live bird and animal exhibits, outdoor activities, and more. NationalEagleCenter.org/events. Well, you know, the perks are many for doing this show. None more invigorating than having the opportunity to talk with successful entertainers whenever they're near or coming next door to do their thing.
I'm in the mood to make some deathbed decisions, maybe just a little last request. Got my front row seat on the edge of the ledge, and I frankly ain't feeling my best, and it's on days like these. Days like these. Yes, it's on days like these. The hat don't help.
In a bit more than a couple weeks, acclaimed actor and sometimes musician Jeff Daniels rides back into Chippewa Falls to fill the Heidi Center with words and music you'll remember. That's the title song from his Days Like These CD. He called to talk about his Days Like These just the other day. Let's talk about the actor briefly before hearing about the musician.
Sure.
A side note, you were born in Georgia but raised in Chelsea, Michigan. I did not realize that you were a member of Chelsea's first family. And your family owned the lumber company. Is that still the case?
Well, there are a couple other families that would argue whether we were the first family or not. My dad, yeah, he ran the lumber company. He was instrumental in making things happen for other people in this town.
I say first family because he was mayor, yes?
He was mayor, he was president of the school board, he was the head of the Kiwanis, he ran a business, He was the guy everybody went to when they had something that needed done in the community, and he always did things that were best for the community. It was he was a great example.
Big shoes to fill.
Yep.
I think you're filling them, from what I hear.
Well, I've done some things in Chelsea. Starting the Purple Rose Theater Company was one of them.
Yeah.
But I've had the help of a lot of people, not only inside the theater, but people who have given money to it. Dad was one of those people. He really wanted that theater in the community because it was going to help the community. And now it's a theater that brings in almost $4 million a year to that community. Not just the theater, but to the restaurants, to the gas stations, to the hotels, to the bed and breakfasts. It's turned out to be a great thing.
I watched a Bloomberg interview that you did with John Heilman, and I watched watched and listened to several other chats that you've had in different settings. I believe at that time you were fresh off the Newsroom phenomenon. Congrats on that Emmy, by the way.
Thank you.
How was the elongated grind of doing that kind of dramatic television series as opposed to the concentrated attention of doing a film, which you're most used to?
The big difference, aside from the marathon, that is a season of a television series.
Yeah.
Newsroom, we shot anywhere from, say, 9 or 10 episodes. That's 6 months solid. And every 2 weeks, you're on a new episode. And it feels like you're studying for final exams for 6 or 7 months. Because you're always memorizing, you're always learning the next week's work. So there's that. You're exhausted by the end of it like you would be after a marathon. What's different also is that in a series that comes back for a second and a third season, there is no ending. And films have endings. Limited series have endings. But series that are coming back, now we're picking up again. And that's just a different beast. You're just riding a different horse at that point. And it's one that just keeps going. Mm-hmm. So there's an adjustment to that. What I loved about it was Newsroom is a 10-episode series, even if it's just a season and with another coming. You're shooting a 10-hour movie. You're shooting the novel, not the short story.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to do more. There's more detail. There's more side roads you can go off with the character. It's a fuller characterization, I've found, and I really like that.
I was a big fan. I wish it were still coming back.
Well, it's served its purpose. They can certainly run that Northwestern speech till I'm long gone, that's for sure.
That was huge. In fact, in researching this particular conversation, I went back and watched that speech. Wow, that was I think a lot of people's jaws dropped during that episode.
It stood out, and the backstory, and the short backstory on that is that it was day 3 of shooting the first episode called The Pilot. An 18-day shoot, and that was day 3. We don't have a series yet. You shoot the pilot, which would be the first episode, and then you send it to HBO, and you wait 6 weeks, and they say thumbs up, thumbs down.
Huh.
And they have turned down bigger names than me and Aaron. So that speech was put in the first 10 minutes of the first episode to grab viewers and to grab HBO.
It did.
That day we shot that, number 2, 3, and 4 from HBO showed up. This was where we find out if we have not only a series, but if we have a Will McAvoy. It was the ninth inning. You're up. You need to get a base hit or a home run, and you need to get it now. There is no second chance. So I was ready for it. I had been waiting decades for that speech, and Aaron Sorkin wrote it, and I was very happy to hit that as far as I could.
You nailed it. Were you literally in front of a large crowd?
Yeah, 500 kids.
And then by contrast, I walk into another room of the house and my spousal equivalent is sitting in a chair with headphones, just laughing her tail off, not being able to hear what she was watching. I had to look up at the screen. She was watching Dumb and Dumber. She didn't even know I was interviewing you today.
Well,
cool stuff.
Look, I'm glad the movie spoke to her.
It spoke to a lot of us.
You know, we thought 12-year-old boys might find it funny, but we weren't prepared for the demographic from 8 to 80.
Yep.
It's completely stupid, but it's timelessly funny. A joy to play a role where you can be completely irresponsible every single day.
Heck yes. We all need that. I need a Dumb and Dumber every once in a while.
We could use some laughs right now. You're right.
Yeah, no kidding. I went to the IMDb website and read your credits. Since 1990 or so, it seems like you've done about a movie a year, maybe sometimes more. The IMDb IMDb bio says that you've become one of Hollywood's, here's a quote, most versatile and reliable actors. Now, given what we think we know about your perspective on things, I'm guessing that you might like the word reliable.
Yeah, it certainly was in the business model when I moved back to Michigan in 1986. To sustain a movie or television career from the Midwest, you got to be reliable. That means when you show up on a set, you're good on take one and take two. You don't take 5, 10 takes to get warmed up and you waste money. Producers can count on you to not only be ready and prepared, but to be good right away. And that really came from all those years being a supporting actor where you're standing next to the big star. You're in the two-shot with Meryl Streep, and we do 8 takes. We're going to use the take where Meryl's great, not the one where you're great. And that means you have to be great 8 times. And that was a great lesson early on about being prepared and coming in ready, and took it all the way to things like newsroom. You know, even though you're number one on the call sheet, you're the star of the show, you stand there at 6 in the morning with your lines learned already, and you're looking around to see who doesn't have their lines learned.
On the phone with Jeff Daniels here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Now to the musician. I talked with you 7 years ago. You were road tripping around in a motorhome at the time. You were by your lonesome. This time you're sharing the stage, and I'd like you to tell us with whom, because I'd like to hear the pride in your voice.
This is not the first tour I've done with the Ben Daniels Band. My son, Ben, has a band. He came to me 13 years ago, walked into my little home office, and he said, "I'm ready." I said, "Ready for what?" He goes, "Teach me the guitar."
Oh, okay.
And I did. And he's 32 now. I think he's had a guitar in his hands every day since. He's an engineer. He's got the band together. They play in several different styles. A few years ago, I went to him. I said, "You know, I'd like some of the songs I write to have a full band behind them." And I just gave them to him. And I said, "What do you guys hear?" And it was fascinating to me to see what some of the stuff I'd written inspired in them. And we went on tour a few times, East Coast a couple times, and then a West Coast swing. And we came off the West Coast and recorded the album, basically the tour. We recorded what we did on tour in a thing called Never Gone Before. And that was more amplifiers and drum sets and things like that. And I said, "Let's do an acoustic version, because there's some songs that really fit a quieter, a more songwriting, a more listening approach." So that's what we're doing on this. There's really an emphasis on family and the importance of family in this show. I mean, I open the show, and I start singing a song called "The Good on the Bad Side of Town," which is something my dad told to me. You know, he goes, "You know, the poorest guy you ever saw might be the richest man you ever see." "What?" He said, "You know, being kind to strangers, you run the risk of them being kind to you." Just stuff my dad would say. And so it's in a song. And to have Ben come out and play and sing along with me, you can see me passing that on. And so, too, with the other band members. I feature them all night. This isn't about stand in the back in the shadows and get out of my way. This is about them as much as is it about me. And by the end of it, there's this huge kind of, you can tell that we're thrilled to be there in Chippewa Falls tonight to share this with you. It's just you and it's just us, and we're glad to be here. That's the approach I take. It makes it a lot of fun to do.
You got a couple of Wisconsin gigs prior to that. So, yeah, the Chippewa Falls thing is where I saw you, and it's probably where I'll go to see you this
time
around.
It's a great venue.
I love that venue. It's very classy looking.
Yeah, it really is.
And you guys don't mess around. I mean, your concert schedule is night after night after night. You must do the healthy foods, the hydration, and the horizontal days off I read about.
Well, my music agent is going, "Are you sure you want to do this?" And, you know, you do Broadway, and it's 8 shows a week. 2 on Wednesday, 2 on Saturday, Tuesday through Sunday afternoon. I mean, it's a long way to go, and it's a marathon, but it's doable. If I'm out on the road, I don't want to be sitting in a Holiday Inn for 2 nights just because I didn't want to schedule gigs. So I book gigs.
Well, there you go. Move on. Hundreds of photos of you online. My favorite was you and Ben playing at Norm's Rare Guitars. And being a rare guitar kind of guy, I had to tilt my head and try to read the price tag on the one you were playing. I had to catch my breath. A 1951 Martin that ran for about $15,000. I had to reel myself back into what I was really searching for.
Norm is a great guy, and he's been a friend to a lot of musicians who like vintage instruments. Norm has a back room that he will take you if he thinks you're a high roller. and he'll pull out the Martin that's, you know, $75,000. And you go, that looks really good, Norm. Put it back in the case.
Your worthy organizer, Colleen, was kind enough to send me your two latest CDs. I'm holding them. There's Days Like These. And then your latest, Simple Truths, also with Brian Vander Ark. For people who don't know who Brian is, tell us.
Brian Vander Ark and the Verve Pipe, right around the 2000, 2001, they had a hit called The Freshman, and just a great, great Michigan band. He's based out of Grand Rapids. And he plays solo now, and the Verve Pipe will go out. They'll play an album that they had 20 years ago, and they'll play it in full. And I saw him in New York in August, the Verve Pipe do that. They also have a children's show. It's doing very well for them. But Brian is still a songwriter at heart, and he and I kind of got together on a couple of his tunes called My Little Town and Overboard, where he was aware of my kind of playwright's story approach to songwriting, because he wanted to do a little bit more of that. So I threw him some ideas, and he finished the songs. And then we said, why don't we write together? And so we took about 6 months of sending each other stuff and rewriting each other's stuff, and Simple Truths is the result of that.
Both of these CDs, they both have completely different flavors to me. The Days Like These reminds me of the Jeff Daniels, the guy that I saw on stage with his guitar. Guitarza, those were his friends. The other one feels very, and even though there's two Michigan guys on it, and Michigan is mentioned in at least a couple songs, it feels very, it feels more Muscle Shoals-y to me, more Lynyrd Skynyrdy. It's kind of acoustic southerny feel to me.
He understands production far more than I.
Okay.
I mean, stuff I'd do would be, you know, like Days Like These. I mean, there's certainly produced on there. Brad Phillips produced it. He produced Simple Truths as well. But it's more three or four instruments, acoustic. It could be glorified demos, you know. But Brian's in there with full production mode, and I don't know a thing about that. So it was fun to turn those guys loose and just see what they want, what they heard. Again, it's the same thing. You look forward to seeing what your work inspires in other people and then kind of get out of the way versus dictate what you want it to be.
After I listened to Simple Truths, I thought to myself, what's this guy trying to do? Prove to us how versatile he is?
Well, that's nice, but it mirrors the acting career. Just when I do one thing,
that's cool.
I turn around and do the other. I'm doing Netflix has a Western that's coming out called Godless at Thanksgiving, a 7-episode limited series, and I play somebody that the bad guy doesn't even begin to describe it.
Mm.
So to go from, say, a Dumb and Dumber to a Will McAvoy in Newsroom to the bad guy in Godless, I love changing it up like that. And the music and the playwriting are reflections of that. I veer all over the place.
One more point on Simple Truths. A song on it is called Another American Down. It's really kind of too bad that it feels so prophetic. And given the way things are, will probably continue to be. Do you conspicuously and consciously set out to write all the genres of songs, love songs, protest songs, commentary, clever humor, or do you simply write what comes along and comment on Another American Down? Again, we saw it happen.
You write what comes next.
Okay.
Sometimes you're motivated to comment. I think artists have an obligation to do so. You can agree with it or not, but at least there's a discussion. There's a reaction. Another American Down was written. There was a week, maybe 10 days, where the kid got shot in Baton Rouge, where the guy got shot in his car in Falcon Heights, Minnesota, and then at a protest in Dallas, cops got shot, white and black, all the way around, and the Charleston church. It's enough is enough. It's not even mentioning Sandy Hook. We wrote it, the year before Las Vegas happened, or the next one's going to happen. You know, I got friends of mine who hunt, and they're going, enough is enough. So where's the answer, folks? And if it takes a song for someone to write that just goes, we need to do better, then let's get to that. But right now, all we get to do is write a song, and nobody does anything. That's where we're at.
We're listening. Hopefully more will listen as time goes on. Jeff Daniels, we appreciate you being with us here on Spectrum West and Wisconsin Public Radio. Safe travels with Ben and the gang. Keep the good stuff coming.
Thanks, Al.
We got another American down. We got another American down. We got another American down. We got another American down.
American down. We got another American down. We got another American down. We got another American down.
Jeff Daniels live with the Ben Daniels Band at the Heide Center for the Arts. Yes, he loves that venue. Tuesday evening, October 31st, 7:30 p.m. Limited number of tickets remain. CVCA.net is the website. Well, that's good stuff. Fun.
Yeah,
poignant. Kardemimmit. I hope that's pronounced right. Music ensemble from Finland visits Rice Lake as part of Arts Midwest Folk Fest in the UW-Barron County Fine Arts Theater. That's Saturday at 7 p.m. The Heide Center in Chippewa Falls brings you Fire and Rain, a tribute to the music of Joni Mitchell, James Taylor, and Carole King. That's Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Also at the Heide, the exhibit is Hugh Mondelaer Retrospective, Art and Addiction. That's through October 27th. Wednesday, October 18th, begins another season of Ask a Scientist featuring Tom Larkart from the UWEC Department of Physics and Astronomy, 7 p.m. Acoustic Cafe. Some spectrum memos for you. Well, you know, Becca, Kate, and Dean are three assisting me to be the best I can be. Thank you. Next week, Nobu is back with a look at concert number one of the CVSO season. Jim Oliver talks with another book festival guest author. And your theater of the mind will perform during an acoustic tour within the developing framework of what will one day be the Confluence Performing Arts Center. I took a tour, construction tour, with Kevin Miller. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. Thanks. See you next week.